I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Is Merrick Garland going to prison? We have Congressman Jim Jordan on. We're going to talk to him about that. Dana Lash joins us about this ugly case out of New York. We will talk about that, what's going on college campuses, education, a hammock story, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, we have a lot of guests on the show tonight, and we have a lot to tackle. We're going to tackle the Attorney General of the United States of America. We have a congressman here. We have a legal case. Someone's going to prison for a long time. I mean, there's so much heavy stuff on tonight's show that we weren't sure where to begin, right? We weren't sure where do you begin on a day like this, but we figured it was only appropriate to bring you some pretty heavy news that's out there. Maybe you've seen it in the news, maybe you haven't. I'm gonna try not to get choked up here, but Red Lobster's closing over 50 locations. Red Lobster is as American as George Washington and bald eagles. And we're apparently losing our greatest seafood restaurant. For me personally, this is it's a loss that, I mean, it's like losing a family member or a kidney. That's what it feels like today. When I woke up and saw this news, I almost didn't even come into work. You're lucky I'm here tonight. So say a prayer for Red Lobster. We'll do what we can. I'm gonna go eat there tonight, try to support them in any way I can. This is hard. Anyway, it's also really hard living in a country that's totally corrupt. The country is it's such a gangster country now. It's completely corrupt. Wrap your mind around this because we're going to get to Jim Jordan in a moment. Joe Biden, special counsel, gets appointed to investigate Joe Biden for his various crimes. Special counsel sits down with Joe Biden, records the meetings, and walks away from it saying, I mean, yeah, he's a freaking criminal, but he's so old. He's just so old. And his memory is so bad that, yeah, he committed all the crimes. We know he committed the crimes, but we can't charge this guy. He's so old. Look at him. He's old. That's essentially what Robert Hur said after the whole thing. So the House of Representatives, the Judiciary Committee, is obviously quite curious. What's on those recordings? You know, we have transcripts, which they lie about all the time, but what's actually on the recordings? What did Joe Biden sound like? How old do you have to sound to avoid getting charged with felonies? And so Jim Jordan, he's been trying to get him. Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States of America, just said, no, you can't have him. That's kind of gangster country we live in now. So let's talk to Jim Jordan about that. Joining me now, great congressman from the state of Ohio. Well, this whole Robert Hur special counsel thing for Joe Biden does not appear to be going away courtesy of the House Judiciary Committee. You see, Merrick Garland is supposed to give them the recordings. Pretty simple request, isn't it? Hey, you have the recordings. We are demanding the recordings. And Merrick Garland is not handing over said recordings as ordered, which is odd. Joining me now, great congressman from the state of Ohio, big cheese on the Judiciary Committee, Congressman Jim Jordan. Congressman, okay, so it just floors me. So the AG just told you what? Screw off? Is that basically what he said?
Yeah, they're not giving it to us. And understand, the elements of the crime are there. Joe Biden knowingly kept classified information. He knowingly released classified information. They've established the motive on page, I think, 231 of the report. Special Counsel Hur says Joe Biden had strong motivations for ignoring classified procedures because he was writing a book for which he got paid $8 million, an $8 million advance. Ooh. So we have motive, $8 million motive. We have the elements of the crime knowingly kept, knowingly disclosed. But then Robert Hur reaches the conclusion. He says, we're not going to recommend charges because Joe Biden is a forgetful elderly gentleman. Okay, maybe all that's fine. But if you got the elements of the crime, you got an $8 million motive, for doing the crime, and you're not going to charge, we'd sort of like to base, have all the facts that you based your decision upon. So we're asking for the audio tape, not just the audio tape when they interviewed President Biden, but also the audio tape when they interviewed the ghostwriter, the guy who wrote the book, Mr. Zwanitzer. We'd like all that information.
Okay. The Attorney General of the United States of America is not the president's personal lawyer unless civics right. has changed since I was in school, correct? I do have that right. He's not the president's personal attorney.
He's not. That you have White House counsel for that. And I'm sure the White House counsel maybe, you know, they're hoping that he won't release it. Who knows if they've talked to him or not? I don't know. But we want the information. Here's the other thing I think is important. We're in the midst of an impeachment inquiry still. So that is even a heightened reason for us to have all the facts, all the evidence. Look, we know people forget things. We all forget things. I forget things. You forget things. That's just human nature. But this was so profound that it became the basis for not charging a crime, not recommending a crime be charged when the elements are there. And as I said, when there's a strong motivation, a strong motive element there as well. So we'd like to know. And then there's the final piece, which is, we know the White House has changed the transcripts because the argument from the White House is, and from the Justice Department is, oh, you got the transcript, you don't need the audio tape. Well, just a few weeks ago, Joe Biden, given his speech, is reading and he uses the word pause, which was not in the script that he was supposed to read. We all remember that situation a few weeks back. When the transcript come out, it didn't have Joe Biden saying the word pause. So we already know the transcripts aren't always consistent with the audio version of what actually happened. So we'd like the audio tape so we, the legislative branch who does oversight, can get all the facts and make a decision and see everything. And frankly, the American people should be able to understand this as well as we're heading into the most important election we have, which is for commander-in-chief.
Yeah, they certainly should. Okay, so where do we go from here, Congressman Merrick Garland? Is he going to prison? What's going on?
Well, we have to mark up the contempt resolution. It's actually just like a bill. We have to mark that up on a schedule for Thursday. That'll go through a markup in the committee. Then the Speaker of the House will decide if and when it comes to the floor. You'd have to have a vote on the floor. And then it goes. And of course, you may wind up in court. You never know how these things play out. I don't think Merrick Garland's suddenly going to, you know, charge himself. I don't think that's going to happen. But I don't think he wants contempt either. So let's hope they decide, you know what, let's just give the tape to the legislative body who has a constitutional duty to do oversight, particularly when they're in the midst of an impeachment inquiry. Just give us the information. That's what we're trying to get.
Okay, let's move on to a three-letter agency I hate. I actually hate all of them, but the IRS might be chief among them, and you're going after them for doing what now?
An IRS agent showed up. This actually happened in our district, the 4th District of Ohio, showed up at a lady's home, knocked on her door, told him, used an alias. And this lady actually thought he was a scam artist, and so did the local police, for goodness sake. So we want to know, hey, Danny Warfall, commissioner of the IRS, what's happened to this guy who was impersonating someone else, actually threatened the law enforcement? We'd like to know what happened. And understand, this happened, Jesse, this happened a little over a year ago on the heels of, if you remember the big story, we had Matt Taibbi, one of the authors of the Twitter files, testifying in front of our committee. And in the midst of his testimony, while the Democrats are asking him, by the way, to divulge his sources, a direct attack on the First Amendment, while that's going on, the IRS was knocking on his door. And there's not anyone who's heard that story who thinks that it was just chance, just a coincidence, that the IRS is knocking on Matt Taibbi's door at the very moment he's testifying in front of Congress about the censorship efforts of the government. But those two things, and then on the heels of that, we have this situation in our own district with this constituent of ours. So the good news is the IRS has announced that they will no longer be making unannounced visits to American citizens' home. That's a good thing. But we want to know what happened to this agent who was so arrogant with one of our constituents. We want to know what the story is.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the story is, too. Okay, Congressman, I'll be honest. I feel a real disconnect between the leadership of the GOP, lots of the leadership of the GOP, and the American people. I mean, we have an anti-Semitism on college campus bill being passed, which is fine, right? No one wants anti-Semitism on college campus. Grocery prices are up 40%. And you hear precious little about that from the Republicans who are supposed to be getting these prices down. What do they not know that people are suffering?
I think we do. And I think certainly the American people can feel it in a real way. I say why this election is so important. because what is it, 3 years and 114 days, I think, of the Biden administration, we have literally went from secure border to no border, safe streets, record crime, $2 gas, $4 gas, and to your point, Jesse, stable prices to record inflation. Take your family out to dinner tonight, your middle-class family got to dinner, it costs you an arm and a leg, for goodness sake. So I think the country gets it, and it underscores why this election is so important. And if we don't win back the White House, we're never going to get the border secure, prices aren't going to come down, bad energy policy is going to continue to drive up the price of everything. It's why this election is so important. And I think those four things, the border, crime, energy prices, and the price of everything else, that's going to drive this election. I think it's why President Trump is up in all six of the seven swing states, and the other one, he's dead even. Wisconsin, he's even. He's winning the other six. I think it's because the American, it's why you saw 100,000 people, for goodness sake, in Wildwood, New Jersey. People are fed up with what's going on. We need to talk about it. We need to do all we can. But with the Democrats controlling the Senate and the White House, it's tough to change the policies right now. That's why we need President Trump back in the White House.
Congressman, before I let you go, I'm not obviously in favor of government intervention and bailouts of any industry. I hate that. It always ends up bad. At the same time, I can't help but feel like maybe you guys should step in when I wake up and I read the news about Red Lobster possibly facing bankruptcy. We can't just allow an American institution, our highest quality seafood place, to go under, can we? Can't you do something?
I don't know if you want the government. I mean, Red Lobster's a great American. I don't think you want the government. I kind of with Jesse on I'm with you on this one, Jesse. We probably shouldn't do that. I remember, what was it now, 15 years ago when it was TARP and the bailouts for the banks and all how this was. I voted against that, and I think we were right about that decision too. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that kind of stuff either.
Well, you were right about that, but I wish you could help Red Lobster out. Either way, Congressman, thank you as always. I appreciate you, sir. All right. Look, everyone wants big government for the things they love. I want a Red Lobster bailout. I'm going to keep pressing this issue with every congressman I know. It is what it is. We have a lot more for you. Before we get to that, let's do this. Let's get you a good night's sleep. Look, it's everything. It changes your entire life. Changes your mood, your energy levels, your health, everything. You ever heard of Dream Powder? It's the greatest stuff in the world. It's from Beam. Beam makes it. It's called Dream Powder. They have a couple different flavors, chocolate peanut butter. I have the chocolate cinnamon. What is it? Well, it's all natural. No more garbage. All natural. And you just pour it in a little glass of water or a little cup of milk. That's what I do. Warm up a little cup of milk and mix it up before bed. It's the most delicious cinnamon hot chocolate in the world. And then you just go to sleep. But when you wake up in the morning, you're not groggy like you always are when you take things to sleep. Not groggy at all. You just wake up and you're ready to go. It's the benefit of all natural. That's the benefit of Dream Powder. Go get some. 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go get some Dream Powder. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I hate the ATF. I haven't told you about that in a while, but I really, really despise, well, I mean, all government agencies for the most part, but the ATF may be the worst. And this Dexter Taylor story, we talked about it several times on the show, just has me so freaking steamed. ATF, bunch of dirtballs, joining with the New York cops, raided some poor sap's home who was making weapons in his basement. He wasn't even selling them, wasn't even advertising them. And now Dexter Taylor is going to the clink for a decade, it looks like. Dana knows more about the Second Amendment than any person I know on the planet. Joining me now, Dana Lash, host, of course, of The Dana Show, which you can watch right here on the first 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, Dana, you're the Second Amendment expert, certainly much more so than me. Shoot me straight. Did Dexter do anything wrong?
Well, I'm not going to shoot you because I'm not a member of the ATF, and not like you, I share your dislike of them. ATF stands for Asshats, Toolbags, and Freaks, as we all know. We can say that because we're not on network TV, so we can get away with that. But no, this case is so infuriating. So let me lay out like the crux of the matter. So in the tradition of our great republic with the Second Amendment began as a privatized thing. I mean, it began as hobbyism. I mean, everybody knows the puckle gun, the Belton gun, rifling, which originated in France and then was adopted by the colonists and then emerged in throughout the United States, first with the Kentucky gun and then so on and so forth. It's always been, you know, hobbyists and people who are curious about how things work that have always advanced the progression and capability of firearms. And this was something that the founders were incredibly aware of at the time, at the writing, the drafting of the Second Amendment, the debates around the Second Amendment, et cetera. So this is how it started. And of course, you know, enshrined as a natural right and affirmed by the Constitution of the United States. And so with that, federal statute, it's like 18 USC 1922 subsections, I think it's OP and R. So there's like several different statutes within federal law that protects the personal manufacturer, what the left likes to call ghost guns, because they got to give it a boogeyman term, the personal manufacturer of a firearm. So you are allowed as a free American to make a firearm at home. Now there are two caveats to this. If you're going to sell it, which you can sell it, if you're going to sell it either through an FFL or a private transfer to someone else who is a legal possessor in your state of residence, you have to put a serial number on it. So it has to be serialized. And if you're going to sell it, you got to do that. And of course, if you're going to start making, you know, more than just one and sell them, then you have to go and you have to get your federal firearms license through our favorite agency, Jesse, the ATF. And so that's how all this works. Now, I bring these two things up because, as you know, with Dexter Taylor's case, he is not accused of doing either of these things. And I don't mean to use this term as a pejorative, Jesse, but the guy's a nerd, right? He's a nerd. God love him. He's an engineer. Like, How Things Work, that's like the most boring show ever on earth. That's probably his favorite show. He loves like engines. He was a programmer. He has an engineer's mind. And he loved figuring out how firearms work, different firearms. He liked building them. He's never even fired all the stuff that he's made. He's never sold anything. He has zero criminal record completely. No record at all whatsoever. He's never sold anything. The state wasn't even accusing him of selling anything. Now, remember the Bruin decision, which handled all the licensing just a couple of years ago with the quote unquote ghost guns. That is in conflict with existing federal law, which has been long established, longer than this New York licensing scheme. And New York is saying that you have to get a license, but New York doesn't want to give you a license. So it won't give you a license, so it can force you into the felon category, which is exactly what happened with Dexter Taylor here. So in short, what's going to happen, and I just talked to Vinu Varghese, his attorney, in my second hour of programming today. I mean, obviously, it's going to go through the appeals cycle. Maybe it'll get up before SCOTUS. We have several years to go before we get to the point of knowing how that's going to work out, which means several years, Jesse, of Dexter Taylor sitting in jail for a completely free, innocent activity. And I ask, where are the protesters for him? Where are all the people in the streets for Dexter Taylor, a Black man who's being persecuted by the state of New York for his Second Amendment right that he was free to exercise?
Yeah, it's funny. If only he'd been high on fentanyl, they'd be storming the freaking Capitol building. Dana, okay, his lawyer said the judge said this, and I'm not even surprised. I mean, all these scumbag commies think like this. Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here, so you can't argue the Second Amendment. This is New York. Dana, obviously, I get a bunch of pushback when I tell people in blue states to move. But look, move or don't move, you very clearly don't have rights in a lot of these states anymore. None whatsoever.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's insane that they were told that they were instructed that by this judge. And here's something fascinating that I did not know until just today. They had switched out the judge that was also going to hear the case and the prosecutor because they didn't want the optic of having a white prosecutor and a white judge send a black conservative to jail because he was exercising his Second Amendment right. So literally in the 11th hour, they changed everything up. And then they went before this very, very far left judge who not only told them in the courtroom that they can't refer to the Second Amendment, which is what this case is entirely based upon, you know, honestly, that they couldn't refer to the Second Amendment. And then she complained, Jesse, because she said that people were criticizing her positions and what she was saying in court online. And she was trying to fabricate or intimate that she was under threat because people were criticizing her. No joke. That's exactly like, that's what she did.
Honestly, we have these people, like these lofty people in our society, and they're a bunch of teenage girls, Dana. I don't even know how we walk. I don't know. How do we survive this? These judges, like you picture the judge in the robe and you think at least some kind of respectability. They're just a bunch of children, sociology majors or whatever they are.
I feel like they lowered the standards. They had to, because I don't know, maybe it was just, you know, the inexperience of youth. But I just thought, you know, these people, if they're your elders and they're in these lofty, you know, very well-respected positions, surely they have to know, like, something about what they're talking about, right? No, they don't. That's what I learned as an adult. They don't.
Dana, we're switching gears just because I don't get Dana Lash that often, and I want to ask you some political questions. Joe Biden, they're not actually going to run him, right, Dana? I mean, they have to bounce him at the convention. I know they can't restart the primary. I know that. But they're never going to roll this turd out there in November, right?
Yeah, they are. In fact, they're going to roll this desiccated old turd out into the floor at the convention. That's exactly what's going to happen, Jesse. I think it's too late for anybody else. I think it's too late even for Newsom. They made their bed and they have to lie in it. And I just think about this. We on the right fight because we have too many people to pick from. On the left, who do they have? They have Biden that they're running, Kamala Harris, who's a DEI hire. They have Gavin Newsom, maybe, who took a state that took in $55 billion in tax revenue last year and then spent something like $24 billion amongst 30 different programs throughout the state on the homeless and only succeeded in increasing it by 6% over the last 2 years. Now they have like a $47 billion deficit, and that's considered Democrats' blueprint for the nation. So they have Gavin Newsom. They had Andrew Cuomo until he killed all those old people up in New York, Jesse. So I don't know who they have anymore. They don't have anybody. We have like an overabundance of people on the right that we can run against them for generations. Who do they have next? They don't have Bob the Builder, the Secretary of Transportation, the Vice Admiral of the canoe fleet at Camp Wimpy Tonka, that guy, Pete Buttigieg, him. They don't have anybody.
No, they don't. They're never going to be able to run Rear Admiral Pete again. There's no way. Anyway, Dana, I'm out of time. You are the best. All right. College campuses are bad places. Somebody has been spending some time with the whole Antifa, Hamas protesters, and we're going to get to her in just a moment. Before we get to her, let's get to you and me and coffee. Is there anything better than coffee? Blackout Coffee is the best. Now, it's not just that they have the best quality. They do that too, but they actually share my values, and that's what I love. The big coffee companies hate us. I went to a coffee museum one time, to ever tell you this, and it was the most commie bunch of garbage you've ever seen in your life. That industry itself hates us, not Blackout Coffee. Blackout Coffee talks about things like guns, God, life, America, and they'll deliver you the best coffee you've ever tasted to your front door. They deliver me mine. That's the only thing I'll drink now. You want some? Want a nice discount on it? Big old fat 20% discount on your first order? BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse is how you get your hands on it. Go. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You finally get to kiss a human.
Oh, that could be a weapon. Yo, you don't gotta put that in my face. You don't gotta put that. Yo, get up there. Get the back.
Well, that doesn't look very pleasant. Joining me now, the lady who had to experience all that, Gabby Cuccia. She is a media correspondent with Drano Media. I love me some Rogan. He's awesome. All right, Gabby, what were you even doing there? That looked dangerous and scary.
What was I doing? I was doing what the media fails to do. And when I see a story, I show on up. And that's exactly what my intent was on taking that flight. I'm in Florida now, DC Drano. We are in Florida, and I was enjoying the nice sunshine. I saw that there was an anticipated Antifa Super Bowl is what those at Washington in Seattle called the event that they were anticipating to happen on Sunday evening, in which there was a Israel demonstration that was doing a march up into their church called The Pursuit. And they were anticipating this original route was to go through the Hamas encampment. And I wanted to be there. I wanted to actually see what this looks like. You always see short clips of chaos. I mean, you could consider the short clip of mine to be a little bit of chaos. And I wanted to get the full story, see what the encampment was like. I spent about 4 hours in there. That was 4 hours prior to that, to the moment where the Israel demonstrators came on up to the encampment. And I learned a lot. I saw a lot, the reason behind all of it. What was I doing there? I was being a journalist and showing up. You know, everyone loves to tweet from afar. I just like to take flights and get there.
I dig it. Can you explain, I mean, just dump it on us. Walk us through these encampments. All I've seen are the daggone videos online. Where are they? Who are these people? Does it smell? Is there beer? What is it like there?
It's absolutely wild. So just to walk you through it. So at the University of Washington specifically, they had state troopers. They had Seattle PD. They had Kings County PD. They had campus police there. The campus police there, when I first arrived, it was around 1:30, 2 o'clock. I talked to campus police. I saw that they started putting out barriers. I said, oh, those are mighty fine barriers. Are those from Antifa? And again, I say Antifa because there's the signage of Antifa. You have all the outfits. You got the goggles. You got the knee pads. You got the gloves. Top to bottom decked out, there's no questioning that Antifa is at these encampments. Now, when I spoke to campus police and I asked about those barriers, they told me that those barriers were supplied by the university. They were instructed to put the barriers to protect this encampment, to protect the encampment to make sure that no one enters it. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the University of Washington is public property. And then when they had told me this, I had followed up with them with a, hey, kind of like today where we're gonna have a counter protest, or you're just a student trying to get on by, are you going to protect them? They explicitly say, I have audio that I dropped on my Twitter and two posts and more audio to come, but they say that they have their hands tied. They are obligated to protect this Hamas encampment and the Hamas pro-Palestinian protesters first and foremost, not the students, not any other counter protests. To add to that barrier, so the barriers that they had initially about 3 weeks ago were their own Antifa provided ones, and the university did them a solid and gave them those nice new metal barriers on top of the fact that they, as I walked to and from for Sunday and Monday through the encampment, there were porta potties being installed, and the university also wanted to make sure that they're able to go to the bath freely. So you really genuinely can't make it up. Yes, did it stink a little? Did I see a lot of armpit hair? Absolutely. Everyone's dressed the same. You have your pro-Palestinians, then you have your Antifa. Then the tents are incredible. Stop me anytime you want. I can go on for days, but the campus police also told me, yeah, I showed up the next morning. It was dead quiet. You could hear a pin drop. I'm walking through the encampment. I actually peeked under the tents to see if I could see feet poking out, anyone kind of just a little restless while they're sleeping. There's no one there. Campus police told me that about 50%, at least 50% of those tents are vacant. The people that come in and out, at least 50%, in their words, are not students. They do whatever they do and show on up when it's advantageous for them, when there's a counter protest, whatever it may be. And it's such a darn shame. When I was there, I tried speaking with any student that was willing to. All of them so scared to talk to me. I would say, hey, you know, do you follow DC Drano? They'd get all excited, you know, Jesse, just as you did, and our fans. And they still were like, they didn't want to talk. That could have been like their moment for fun to be like, hey, I was on, you know, Drano, I was on Rogan's page, all scared to death to even comment on the reality of the situation. But you can't be surprised by the University of Washington, because this is the same school that said Black students did not have to take their exams after George Floyd, which is absolutely heinous. You can't make it up. There's emails that I have on hand that state just that. So incredible, truly. There you have it. At least for now, I'll keep going. But.
I almost forgot after St. George Floyd died how insane this country went. All right, yeah, the mood, I know that's a really weird question to ask, but I am curious about it. Does it feel like just kind of a fun thing that a bunch of idiot college kids are doing? Hey, let's go have a beer and protest for a little while in the encampment. Or did it feel dark? Lots of times these things feel really, really dark and ugly. And I know there's not a bright and sunny way to say kill all the Jews, but did it feel dark, or is it just a bunch of kids screwing off?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, they were kind of set up for success in the sense of like the weather genuinely was like the first like sunny day that they've had for a long time, you know, all jokes aside. So much of a reason for everyone to kind of be out and seek what was truly going on at this encampment. But you are correct. Yes. So when I was there about 30 minutes prior to the Israel demonstrators making their way up, so it's about 4:30 p.m. when they were approaching the liberated zone, if you want to call it that, shore, it went from pretty happy people like listening to music. I mean, it's nuts. They're selling fruit. They're selling flowers, but capitalism is bad. I don't know. Sure. It's a bunch of hippies, truly. And I like the hippie life, but not to that extent. And then as soon as 30 minutes up to them showing on up, the Israel demonstrators, everyone started flooding all of the perimeter, everyone popping out of their tents, making sure that they have numbers written on their forearm. I'll tell you, since I spent so much time there, that these numbers that were written on the forearm, I'd spent the time with them. They didn't know I was part of Drano Media. They befriended me. They asked me, oh, do you have the Northwest Community Bail Fund number? And I was, excuse me, do you have the number? If you get any escalated law enforcement that you have interaction with, you will bail will be set at $1,000, of which you will only have to pay 10% of that, which means I only have to pay $100 of a get out of free jail card from the Northwest Community Bail Fund. To go a step further, I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I really just want to make sure that we're emphasizing this. And I'm going to drop a video this evening, kind of you know, piecing this all together. But when I was given that number, I looked at it and I said, that's not the number for the Northwest Community Bail Fund. I went on the website. I looked at the Contact Us page. I looked at that number, completely different from the number on my arm that those Hamas protesters have. I followed that number. It goes to an individual in Washington state. It makes no sense to me. I called that phone number. That phone number is a personal line. And the voicemail, when you call, because they don't pick up, I called at 11:30 my time. It's 8:30 their time. So if you want to break laws, do it after the fact, because they're not going to answer the phone at 8:30 a.m. But when I got that voicemail, it was just a casual individual that said, bail fund, that's it. So there's something very odd going on. People are paying, they're paying the price for recklessness, and it's fine. And no one cares. You know, but this is the same place. I mean, Washington State in and of itself is absolutely buck wild. I'm very sad to report that you talk about Jay Inslee. He's the worst, truly. I mean, I'm sure people on the left would say that as well. He's absolutely nuts. The gubernatorial race, Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, who, you know, thank him for all the chaos in Washington State. Two other Bob Fergusons actually joined the race to try and spread out the vote, also registering as Democrats, because no one wanted the real Bob Ferguson to stand up and get the votes. But 24 hours after the fact, I guess it's a state statute in which those that have a similar name to someone that runs for office, they're actually not allowed to run for office if they have intent to confuse people of someone with a prominent stature or notoriety or whatever you want to call it, fame, infamous, all that. Very odd, and just learned about that, but it makes sense. Checks out with Washington State.
Yeah, it sure does. Gabby, that was awesome. You come back soon. That was awesome. Come back soon. All right. College campuses. Indoctrination doesn't start in college. It starts earlier now. It's too bad. We're going to talk to somebody about that in a moment. Before we do that, let me talk to you about the timeshare you think you're stuck in, but you're not. There's a family business that gets people out of timeshare. It's called Lone Star Transfer. They've been doing this for so long. They've helped over 20,000 timeshare owners legally and permanently get out of their timeshare. You are not stuck in your timeshare. Stop calling the timeshare company. Stop emailing them. You're just going to frustrate yourself. Call Lone Star Transfer instead. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. They guarantee it. They put it in writing. They give you a time frame. They will set you free. 844-310-2646. Call them, all right? We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Quoting, the most dangerous person in the world is Randy Weingarten. It's not a close call. If you ask who's the most likely to take this republic down, it would be the teachers' unions and the filth that they are teaching our kids and the fact that they don't know math and reading or writing, end quote. Take down the republic, Randy Weingarten. I know you're effective, but that's something.
I mean, I do not understand why they are afraid of knowledge, or why they are afraid of kids critically thinking.
Oh, yes. That's Communist John Denver. Mad once again that Corey DeAngelis is busting her up as he has so many times. Joining me now, my friend Corey DeAngelis. He has a book out that I want you to go buy. It's called The Parent Revolution, and that is a revolution going on in this country, and he is on the vanguard of it. Corey, I love that Communist John Denver hates you. It just blesses me to no end.
Well, they really stepped in it by fighting to keep the schools closed as long as possible. Randy was calling Trump's plan to reopen schools reckless, callous, and cruel. They were lobbying the CDC to make it more difficult to reopen schools in person. She was even threatening safety strikes. So she overplayed her hand and awakened a sleeping giant. Parents who want more of a say in their kids' education, we should really give her the school choice MVP trophy. In fact, I actually dedicated the book to her for overplaying her hand, showing her true colors, and sparking a parent revolution. And if you want to take Ted Cruz's advice, Senator Ted Cruz on the back, he endorsed the book and he says, ruin Randy Weingarten's day by reading this book. I mean, because he must really feel bad about unleashing education freedom inadvertently and promoting homeschooling inadvertently, for showing she's a horrible human being that hurt kids by locking them out of their schools for so long. And then when they got back into the schools, she's been fighting nonstop for radical indoctrination in those institutions. Parents want the schools to focus on the basics, not on indoctrination.
Corey, I'm glad you brought up the CDC thing, because this is not something I have let go, as so many people know. Would you just do me a favor? You are the man who wrote the book on all this. Walk us down memory lane and how that woman, how they acted during COVID when it comes to education, how they stuck their nose in pandemic stuff. What did she do?
You must have thought that they were all drama teachers. I mean, the Chicago Teachers Union, one of her local affiliates, actually panned for an interpretive dance video. It was freaking embarrassing. If you thought the math and reading test scores were atrocious in Chicago, you really should feel bad for the kids who want to do extracurriculars like dance, because they did this pathetic, embarrassing video to, and it was horribly put together too. Their videographers were horrible. But the point is, they did everything they could just to not go back to work, whereas everybody else was going back to work. The private schools were open, the daycares were open, private businesses were open, and you had them deleting tweets saying that the push to reopen schools is rooted in sexism, racism, and misogyny. They threw every leftist buzzword at the wall to see what would stick, just so they could hold children's education hostage to secure ransom payments from the taxpayer. And guess what? They got $190 billion in so-called COVID relief since March of 2020, but their plan quickly backfired. because they showed families what was happening in the classroom through remote learning, which, Jesse, we should really just call it remotely learning. There wasn't a lot of learning going on, but families did get to see the radical leftist critical race theory, gender ideology garbage that was being shoved down children's throats in government schools for far too long. And that awakened the parents like we've never seen before. And they're never going to forget that. They're not going to unsee what they saw starting in 2020. And as Vodi Bakum famously said, we cannot continue to send our children to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans. The good news here is parents aren't surprised anymore. They've woken up. They've seen what's going on. We see it every day on social media. Thank goodness for Lips of TikTok for exposing the rot in the government school system. And the best solution is to say, hey, if you're going to label me as a domestic terrorist for showing up at school board meetings, and they did that with the National School Boards Association, they had the FBI actually create a threat tag for parents, specifically for ones protesting at school board meetings. They mobilized the federal government to clamp down on parents because they saw parents as a nuisance. They saw parents as getting in the way between them and indoctrinating their kids with leftist ideology. So this is an important fight. This revolution is one that we're winning. It's one that we have to win because the left almost doesn't even have to have kids anymore, and they can still influence our culture through controlling the K through 12 government school system. They get millions of kids that they can indoctrinate every year for 13 years of their lives for 7 hours a day. And you can't beat that without fighting back to take our schools, without being able to take your money elsewhere, without supporting school choice. And look, 11 states have already done this. They've passed universal school choice, Iowa, Arkansas, Utah. I can go over the rest of them, but there's a bunch. Oklahoma, it's red states that are doing this. They're engaging in friendly competition to empower parents. And that's how we fight back and strike at the root to empower parents. They can become their own interest group that's even more powerful than the teachers' unions because they care about their kids more than anybody else, certainly more than bureaucrats sitting in offices hundreds of miles away.
Corey, there are so many parents watching right now who want that kind of thing that you just said for their kids. They want school choice. They want education freedom. They want to be able to send their kids where they want to send them. What can a parent do who's watching right now? Because if you don't have, you know, one of these great laws that's been passed, you feel helpless, you're frustrated, you got your kids stuck in some garbage school system. What should the parent watching do if they want change?
Make your voices heard. Show up at the school board meeting. If they don't listen to you, run for school board and kick their butts out of office. And if they still don't listen to you and you're in a deep blue area, perhaps you should start calling your legislators and pressuring them as well so that you can take your kids somewhere else to a school that's aligned with your values. You want universal school choice so that you have leverage so that the school districts and the school boards don't try to just bully and silence you so that they actually listen to you and look at you as a partner, as a customer. And the last chapter, I also go over some other things that you can do to tweak the system to improve the public schools as well, including aligning the school board elections with the general election. The teachers unions don't want you to have a high voter turnout because they want their special interest to control the outcome. So they do these elections on random times so that they can win. But these same people who are saying Republicans are a threat to democracy and our voter and are suppressing votes, they suppress votes when it comes to education issues because their special interests, the teachers' unions, can control the outcomes that way. You also just want more of sunlight. It's the best disinfectant. Let's have transparency in the public schools. Imagine the left fighting against that, and they do in some cases. They've actually vetoed bills. Governor Evers in Wisconsin, for example, vetoing transparency bills. And so that should cause the Democrats to lose votes if they do block simple legislation like that in the future. So let's see where the money's going. Look, it's going towards administrative bloat. It's going towards Randy Weingarten, who makes over $500,000 a year. It's not going to the classroom. New York City, leftist crap schools there, they spend $440,000 per student per year. Chicago, $30,000 per student per year. And in Baltimore, they have dozens of schools with 0% proficiency rates. Zero kids in 40% of their high schools in Baltimore can't do math proficiently. Zero kids. It's insane, and it needs to stop. And the best way to do it is to engage in this parent revolution, win some elections, become a political juggernaut, a political force to be reckoned with, And I document a lot of these wins, and it's a blueprint for success for how you can win in your state too. It's even if you don't care about education, if your kids aren't in the public school system, if you don't have any kids, you should still care about this, because the left can use the school system to their advantage to change the rest of society and the rest of the policies that you care about too.
Math is so overrated anyway. Corey, where can people get this book real quick before I let you go?
You can get it anywhere. It's The Parent Revolution. Just Google it. Amazon's an easy place to find it, but you can find it basically anywhere. It's in stores at physical locations as well, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, and otherwise. But it's The Parent Revolution. Just Google it. Please order it today. It's out. I'm glad to join you on your show on release day. It's going really well. And as Ted Cruz says on the back, ruin Randy Weingarten's day by reading this book.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I support it. Go buy Corey's book. Corey, I appreciate you, my brother. Well done. The Parent Revolution. How about that? All right, we have light in the mood. It involves a hammock. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And you know what are underrated? Hammocks. I love hammocks. Now, full disclosure, I've had some bad experiences with hammocks, being as how I'm 6'8", and we were using them in the jungle in Thailand, and it didn't work out. Well, anyway. But I love hammocks, and I'm a big supporter of taking a nap in one. And this guy, I support him.
I would like to see the sign that says no hammocks.
We've got a whole.
Where's the no hammock sign?
We got a whole list of things.
No. I can't see you. You can't see me.
If you don't come out of that,
I'm not here.
I'm calling the police.
No.
What?
No.
Oh my God.
No.
Oh my God.
That's not me.
Well, oh my God.
I won't be stopped. Whoa. I said I won't be stopped. You see that?
Oh my God.
Yeah? I'm like an anaconda.
Oh my God.
A little bit.
You're gonna give yourself a concussion. You
can't have
a panic in your
nose. Come on, just drive the bus. Everyone's got places to go.
I don't think we can. Can you get down so we can get where we're going? Please?
What?
Dude, please?
I'm staying in the hammock.
I'm not moving this bus.
You know what? There's AC in here.
Dude, get down.
I'm not getting down.
Get down.
The bus is not moving.
Get down. Get down. We have places to go.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.